Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast, talking about youth baseball coaching and player development. Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field.
We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show.
All right, welcome back.
We're back.
Season 2, episode 2.
Yep, here we are.
2-2 count.
Yeah, absolutely. Adam, how's your week going, man?
It's been good. Been a little crazy. I was a little down under the weather at the beginning of this week. I think you were
last week.
It's just one of those things that I don't know if it's allergies or if allergies kind of just compounds your immune system.
And like all the kids are back in school, so I feel like that just kind of swarms up. You know, it's kind of gets all the sickness going.
The petri dish is back up and
running. Yeah, our household is filled with runny noses and coughs and all that stuff. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's good stuff, man.
Yeah, I can definitely hear it a little bit as you're talking.
Yes. So, like, it started out with, like, a sore throat, headache, all that stuff. Just, like, and then it was just a respiratory infection. And then, like, man, I lost my voice last weekend on a tournament. Like, I was raspy. I just sound super, like, super raspy. And now it's just, like, my voice is just gone. You know, just slowly coming back. But, hey, so excuse any nasally, any weird voice today.
Yeah, all right. Was it COVID? Do you know? Or you
just a respiratory infection. That was it. Just a normal cold. Yeah. But, yeah, that was it.
Well, glad you're back on the
mend. Right back at you, man. Yeah. Right back at you, yeah. It's good stuff right now. Good stuff.
Good deal. How are your Padres doing?
The Padres are doing well. I think no matter what, like, they're in the postseason. I mean, they're bouncing back and forth between first and second place. I think they're really high on the wild card, so even if they don't pull out first place, you know, they'll definitely be in the wild card. But,
My Rangers.
What about them Rangers?
They have made a push, man. They have won 15 of their last 20.
Nice.
And I think they're 7-3 in their last 10. And the Astros have scuffled a little bit.
Yeah.
So we're only a game and a half back of the wild card and only 2 games back first place, which is crazy. So between the Astros, the Mariners, and the Rangers, there's kind of a 3-way race now for first place in the division.
I saw the Mariners making a rally too.
They made some big trades at the deadline. Yeah. And everybody kind of crowned them kings.
For sure.
Then they scuffled a little bit. It's like, hey, you got to earn it. You're not just going to get it handed to you.
Yes. So. Absolutely. Do you guys play this weekend in your tournament team?
Yes. Yeah, we're playing a Sunday only, actually down back by my church. Nice. So, yeah, double elimination. Been a little bit since we've done a Sunday only, so
Sunday only. They can be long days. A long day. Man, we did a Sunday only a couple weeks ago for our first tournament, and gosh, by the time we had a couple walking wounded players. By the time we made it all the way to the championship. We had the first game, and we ended up going all the way to the last game, and we threw 2 non-pitchers. Like, that was all we had.
We ended up
getting run ruled in the championship, but it was.
You made it there.
We made it there.
You got the bling.
We got to the field at 6:45 a.m. Didn't leave until about 11:45 p.m.
That is crazy.
It was a long day.
One of my assistant coaches was telling me that one of his buddies' teams, that was the same time frame. They got there at like 7 and didn't leave till after 11.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's tough. That's freaking long day.
I will say I'm not throwing any like locations under the bus, but like I had, you know, you see something new every day. That tournament, we had an umpire get fired
for being
intoxicated.
Oh, yes.
He was there for 2 games. One of them was our game, and he was supposed to home plate umpire the next game as well. And,
so that wasn't water in his jar?
It was straight up. Yeah, there was a new umpire, and we asked. We were like, did that guy get fired? It was like, he got fired. And then, like, word on the street was he was a little,
That's crazy.
A little out of it. So, You see something new every day, but yeah, that was a first. New, you see something new. First. You always wonder sometimes on umpires. But,
that's crazy. Yeah, like, yeah. Are you really seeing the strike zone? Really,
that game, like,
are you seeing two strike zones right now?
But it was
now?
Funny because we were playing the year younger than us. So it was a 13-14. So we're 14s. So we were playing the 13U team in performance. And, like, we were throwing our aces, obviously, because it was bragging rights. So we threw our aces at each other. And it was like, you throw them right down the middle, and it was ball. Throw one down right down the middle, strike. Throwing outside, strike. Throwing high, ball. You know, like, whatever.
Right,
like,
right.
You had no idea what was going
Completely
on.
Completely inconsistent.
So, pitch that's counts crazy. Jumped like crazy. Yeah, so that's kind of the gist. So, you see something new every day, but I really did see something new that first tournament. I've never had that happen before.
That's pretty wild. I have heard some stories. There was a story of a guy who I think was a tournament director in Dallas. And he was supposed to be getting fields ready or something, and he, like, he was strung out in his car.
No.
And they had to wake him up, and
oh my gosh,
it was pretty rough.
Jeez. Like, no, everyone's human, everyone struggles, but man, like, it's pretty crazy.
Went on I guess it was overnight from one day of the tournament to the next. And,
oh my gosh.
And like had just stayed up all night partying or something. I don't know what, but yeah, crazy. Wow.
Wild stuff. Jeez.
Well, at any rate, that's not how we handle ourselves.
No, not at all.
That's not how we try to.
Not at all. But anyways, yeah.
How are things going with your team?
Our team's good. We are, right now, I believe we're right at 500. We played about 8 games.
Yep.
Yeah, things are good. Getting the feel for all of our guys, getting, you know, throwing speed, make sure all of our pitchers are getting in better shape. We are competing at some pretty good teams. We beat our younger team, which is always a good feeling, you know, making sure we beat them.
You got to.
But, yeah, John, if you're listening, sorry about that. But
got to stand on business.
Yes. But, yeah, our team's going good. It's right now just understanding the small things now that we're adapting into really big boy baseball. So, yeah. Like, when to advance on ground balls, when to return on ground balls, you know, like, just, like, base running things. And so, yeah, just minor things. But
yeah,
what about you?
Good.
Team's
going good? Going well, just getting acclimated to pitching for my 9U boys. Just, you know, it's all new.
Yeah.
And just the mechanics of figuring out how to get on the rubber, how to get your sign, how to come set, how to not, you know, come off the rubber and get a balk, and like all of those,
the technicalities,
all of those things that, you know, you take for granted once you've played for a couple of seasons.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, learning those mechanics and making sure that they know what they're doing and that it's not moving too fast for them and that kind of thing.
It's like baseball. Baseball, you want to be loose, you know, you want to be loose and fluid and all that. But like pitching, it's almost like you have to be a robot, you know, like,
yeah,
because you have to repeat your mechanics over and over and over and over and over. And it's like, it actually takes a lot of athleticism to do that. So
we played 2 tournaments, and every team we've played, they've all they started kid pitching 8U, and so a lot of these teams that we've played have already been pitching for a season or two, and so that leaves us a little bit behind the eight ball, but we'll catch up. I mean, we'll get there. One of the boys pitched 3 innings on Saturday and only allowed 2 runs.
Wow.
Against a team from Seminole, and like threw strikes and didn't really allow a ton of walks. Man. And I was like, yes, there we go.
Nice.
It was fun. The 11U boys were incorporating 4 new players and just getting them up to speed. And things are going well there. Still got some learning to do.
Sure.
Some growth to have happen, but you know, they're making progress.
Nice.
And speaking of my 11U boys, I thought we would use one of their games from this past weekend for a segment on Chalk Talk.
For our new segment.
New segment. Hit Chalk it. Talk. There we go.
Oh, yeah. Yes. All right, so welcome to Chalk Talk. Yes. Welcome to Chalk Talk. So Chalk Talk's our segment where we're just talking about just successes from the previous week.
Or failures.
Or failures, learning one, experience, things that you could do better, all that stuff.
Yeah,
so.
I think, you know, talking strategy, like what would you do, what would you maybe not do at any rate. So we were up 6-2 in our first bracket game on Sunday. And little things just kind of start happening.
Sure.
And you know, our motto is win the next pitch. And you could kind of tell that now we're up 6-2. We can let our foot off the gas a little bit here and coast to the end. And they scored 6 runs on us.
Oh my gosh.
And won 8-6. Jeez. And you know, by the time that happened, then once we come back to the dugout, even though we were the home team, we were defeated. We were down on ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
And so then going back up to bat, like it ended pretty quickly, unfortunately.
It's hard whenever another team puts up a big lopsided number. It's so hard to bounce back from that.
Yeah.
And it's so hard teaching younger kids, like, it's not over, right? Like,
right.
If they could score 6 runs, you could score 6 runs, right? But, like, it's not always that easy.
Yeah. And, yeah, so it's like.
So looking at it, like, what would be kind of like the takeaway on that? Was there anything that kind of played out? Was it?
Well, you know, I would want to know, like, maybe from your perspective, what do you do when you start to sense that it's slipping on you? Like, what do you do in those situations?
I feel like if we're on the field and the team starts getting tons of base runners, starts scoring 3, maybe 4 runs, or like tying run is pretty close to coming up to the plate or even on base, like I like to implement mound visits, you know, just to slow the tempo down, kind of break their momentum. Heck, even do a pitching change or two, you know, depending on how it goes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, that's hard. I think my biggest thought is, like, just completely change the speed of the game. So throw their rhythm out the door by mound visits, pitching changes, and not just a mound visit, like a long mound visit, you know, like kind of just like cool their jets, settle them down, and then let my team just kind of like take a breath and then get back to it.
Right.
And then, you know, if tying run gets on base, probably a pitching change. And then if game-winning run gets on base, maybe another pitching change. Like, I know we don't want to blow out people's arms, you know, by tons of pitchers, but, like, it's almost like you got to throw every card at the game.
I like that idea of, like, disrupting the rhythm just from a strategic standpoint of, you know, hitting is contagious, and once you start to see it happen from a team perspective, it just starts to, you know, get rolling on you. And so, yeah, I think there probably is something to be said for disrupting their timing, disrupting their rhythm.
Yeah. I just find that that's the easiest way, but, like, there's a lot more to it. I mean, looking at hindsight, do you think you left a pitcher in too long? Or
I think that was probably the case. There was a little bit of not executing the pitches that we were calling.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
You know,
there's so many things that go into it.
Yeah, and it's hard to know, like, if a pitcher is not feeling confident in throwing the pitch that we want in a particular situation.
Yeah,
you know, it's hard to know whether they didn't execute or whether they weren't confident in it or whether they just decided to do something different because they wanted to do something different.
Yeah.
So I think it could have been a little bit of that. And also, like, the thing I talked about with my boys once we got back to practice was, look, in life, there are going to come times when we face challenges and we have to learn how to finish the job. No matter what career you're in, you have to learn how to finish a job.
Yes.
You can't leave something halfway done. And you can't take a mediocre approach even when you feel like you've done a great job up to a certain point. Like, the final details of something are often the hardest. Like, if you're building a house, it's those last details that just seem to take forever. You know, they always seem to create problems in the end. Yeah. You don't want to take shortcuts. You want to make sure that no matter what's happening, you're always going at 100%. And that's a tough lesson to learn. And sometimes the only way to learn it is by losing.
Yeah, for sure. But going back to the pitchers, sometimes it stinks when teams, like you said, hitting is contagious, but it also stinks when you have a pitcher just throwing strikes, that's all also another issue where it's my pitcher's doing exactly what they're doing, but this team is just wailing on them. Right. Stinks. But,
I think for the other thing we've been starting to work on at 11U is pitch location. So, last year it was, let's just command the fastball.
Yeah.
And let's learn an off-speed pitch. And now we're starting to realize, we can't just throw that fastball over the heart of the plate. We need to start pinning down the corners.
Yeah.
And learning how to do that and pitch to that outside corner, that inside corner.
Absolutely.
And keep your changeup down. If you've got other stuff, making sure that it's hitting the spots where we want it to hit and not being left out over the plate.
Yeah.
Because, a high changeup is a double.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like kids are just progressing faster and faster these days. You see younger kids way better these days than they were, years ago. I just feel like the development side of things, players are getting a lot more courageous. They're getting a lot more skillful. And they're just, I feel like they're just competing at a higher level now with younger kids. So, yeah, hanging changeups, even at 9U age or 10U age, they're going to get smacked.
Yep.
Yeah, baseball's going to get smacked.
Yep, they really are. You got to learn how to keep that changeup down in the dirt. It's got to finish down.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the goal, Chalk Talk is just giving, feedback for that. So at least, you discuss it with your team. You have a plan of action to continue on. And, whether that's coaching your pitchers to start hitting, outer half, inner half, outer corner, inner corner, or, throwing a changeup for a low strike, or even learning how to bury your changeup in the ground. So it sounds like, you have takeaways from that.
Yeah. And, I think the other thing for me is my mission as a youth baseball coach is to prepare these boys for high school baseball and life.
Yes.
And helping them become young men who know the importance of staying the course and giving it your all the way to the very last pitch.
Yes.
Whatever situation comes up later on in their lives, hopefully they remember that.
Yeah.
That lesson of stay the course, work hard all the way to the end.
Yes.
So that was a failure to talk about, and we're going to talk more about catchers later in this episode. And how to call pitches and framing pitches. Because I do want to ask you a little bit about what your signs are for calling locations. But we'll get into that in a little bit. Because right now, we want to talk about
success.
It's time to talk about success. Woo!
Yes. All right, welcome to the next segment. Let's talk all about success. So if you're with us last week, we kind of started discussing the pyramid of success, John Wooden's pyramid success. Each episode, we're just going along all the different building blocks, the mortar, all that stuff. So if you're with us last week, we talked a lot about industriousness and hard work. Today, we're going to be talking a lot about a lot about friendship, right?
Yeah,
a lot friendship. About friendship. So friendship ties into team chemistry.
It's interesting to me that friendship, of all the things that, to lay the foundation for what builds a good team, that after hard work, friendship is the next thing.
Yes.
Strategy and all of that seems to play such a huge role in winning games at the sports level.
Yeah.
But it's so far down the line of what's important to team building. It's interesting to me that friendship and and some of these next couple things like loyalty as well, are the next building blocks. So how do you help develop team chemistry on your teams?
I mean friendship, like when you think of like the actual root of friendship, like it's overall like it's having each other's backs, you know. Like it ties into some of the other components on that like bottom line of the pyramid, but honestly, like just having each other's backs, making sure that you communicate with your teammates, because I mean friends communicate, right? Friends talk about life, friends talk about that, but like on the baseball field you have to be able to talk, you know, you have to have each other's backs. The way to start building team chemistry, I think, is like putting them through some suckiness at practice. Letting them struggle together, whether it's running pulls, you know, or doing conditionings. That always builds a little bit of team chemistry. Having them almost hate you as a coach together, you know, like it kind of ties to the team chemistry. So, like, as a coach, the way sometimes I'll manage it, because I coach 14U, is honestly, like, holding them accountable sometimes at practice to where, like, okay, if we have a certain amount of failures, we have to run. And, like, sometimes the running aspect does build team chemistry. That's looking from a negative standpoint. But, like, from just an overall friendship developmental, a lot of – we don't do a lot of things outside of team practices and stuff, but, like – you can also host events. Like, I know you've done a camp out, right?
Yeah.
Did you have an overnight stay?
Yeah, we've done a few things like that. And I feel like, too, that 14U level, they're entering high school. How many of yours are freshmen at 14U?
We have one freshman, but the rest are eighth graders.
Okay. So they're getting ready. This is the last phase before high school. And there is, I think, a difference between where you're at with that team and where I'm at with like my 11 and 9-year-olds.
Yeah.
Because at that level, they need to be prepared for tougher coaching.
For sure.
Because that definitely is what you're going to get in high school a lot of times.
Yes.
And I agree. I do think that there are times when, and when we're running laps in practice, more often than not, I say, look, you have to stick together. Not one of you, even if you're a great runner, you can't just go way out in front of the pack.
Yeah.
You have to learn how to run together and encourage each other and pick each other up and all of that. And I think you're right. I think there is a lot of that happens during those tough, you know, strength conditioning times.
The suckiness.
Yeah. Yes. And I've gotten into the habit where that's pretty much how we end every practice is with laps. And I took your idea of however many runs we allow over the weekend is how many laps we got to do that week. And that's been motivating for them.
Oh, man.
But I do enjoy getting the boys together for swim parties, for cookouts. You know, I remember our first tournament last year together. All the parents brought tents, and they had a TV set up to watch college football in between games. Because we had a big gap. We had like an early game and then an afternoon game.
Yeah.
And so we had it set up, and there was, you know, burgers and brats and all the chairs were around. And that was a great, like, team bonding experience.
Absolutely.
I think you can tell the difference between a team that really exhibits friendship and like those teams that are thrown together to be mercenary teams.
Yes.
Who, you know, here's a bunch of really good players. Let's just go win a tournament or win a ring or whatever. There's a palpable difference, I think, because when stuff goes wrong on that team of, you know, egos. it can unravel pretty fast.
Yeah, and it ends up like, I mean, I've had teams like that in the past. Like when I coach older groups, it's like you'd have people quitting left and right.
Yeah,
you know, when things go bad, it's like, oh well, Johnny's no longer on the team, or Jimmy just left. You know, like or at the end of the season, you lose half the team because they're not really bought in. They're not really friends. No one really cares. They're chasing something different, which is crazy.
And it's really hard to then build something for the future if you don't have that. So
absolutely.
We did a lock in here at the facility. it was fun. We did a practice, and, nice. And then we went back to our place and watched movies and ate popcorn and let them stay up real late. And
that's awesome.
All of that stuff. The World Series trip was really, really powerful in terms of forming those team bonds.
Staying in a hotel with your buddies. Yeah. Like, that's a fun experience.
Going to those the Rangers game and all of that stuff.
It creates those stories, those key memories. Yeah.
I think there are times, too, where, you can set up this kind of, like, coaches against the teammates, kickball, stuff like that. Or if y'all execute this really well, then the coaches have to do push-ups or the coaches have to run a lap,
For sure.
And they love doing that.
For sure.
And, but it does take time. Like, friendship is not necessarily something you're going to develop overnight.
No, not at all. Not at all. That's, it definitely does take time. Sometimes it takes a full season. Sometimes it takes longer than that. I'm fortunate it didn't necessarily start this way, but it has worked out to be this, where I think the majority of the kids on my team will funnel into the same high school. So they all funnel into the same high school. They go to different middle schools, but like they play against each other. So Oklahoma City, there's like, two or three middle schools that funnel into Edmond North, which is one of the main high schools here. So I have some kids at Sequoia and Cheyenne, which they'll actually form together to North. I have a couple, outliers that go to different schools, but it is nice seeing that, a lot of them do go to school together.
Yeah, that's cool. The other thing that I try and do, especially in incorporating new players, is let's make sure that everybody knows everybody's names. Everybody knows what your favorite candy is, what your favorite movie is, what your favorite song is. Let's make sure, especially at the outset, that you set aside intentional time to learn about each other. Seeing that this building block is as important as it is, as foundational as it is, you've got to make time for that to be intentional. If you just go out and play and don't learn about each other, when the going gets tough, like you said, they'll abandon the team.
Absolutely.
So you have to take time to build that team concept.
Absolutely. Another avenue, I haven't done it yet with this team, but either fall season or spring season, I want to go to a food bank and help, package food.
Yes.
Or you can go, Edmond has the Miracle League, which is it's baseball, but based around younger kids that are in wheelchairs or on on crutches. So it's actually a league that you can go
special
out there and help.
Special needs.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. But a special needs league. You can go help out.
Yeah,
with
that's
that.
Pretty neat.
So it's a cool thing just to kind of get them out of perspective of the here and now for them. It gets them in perspective people need food, donate to them, or these special needs players that aren't fortunate like us that could, run full speed or, whatever it is.
Right.
Cool stuff.
I talked about it a little bit last week as we were going through my PERFORM acronym, and that O being others centered, like serving others. And just recognizing that in a team environment, in a team concept, the we comes before me. You have to put the we before the me. And it's tough in baseball because it is such an individually driven sport. And I'm sure that as you get into the upper levels of high school, college, minor leagues, major leagues, that team concept is probably not as strong. Because there's so many moving parts and so many things happening that you really have to focus on you and making sure that you're getting done what you need to get done. So we have to build those habits as well, even at the younger ages of make sure you're getting in the cages on your own, make sure you're throwing that tennis ball up against the wall and working on short hops on your own.
Absolutely.
You've got to do your personal individual work. But I think for youth sports, and eventually when you do get to those upper echelons, if you want to be a championship winning team, you do still have to have that team concept.
Yes.
You're absolutely. Not going to get there without a team concept.
Absolutely. Yes. You still have to play as a team for sure. For sure. Well, awesome. Well, that's kind of our gist. Let's talk about success.
Talking about success right there.
So yes. Look it up. Pyramid of Success. We'll post it on our social media. Performance Sports OK on Instagram. To kind of give you an image of what we're talking about. Or if not, just a quick Google search. You can see where that pyramid plays out. All right, so on to today's topic. Today's topic's all about building every position. So big focus on catching, but we're going to be talking about how coaches can develop each position, how we funnel it into practice planning, into games, all that stuff, and how we can actually develop each role on the field.
Yeah. So I wanted to start with catchers because you were a catcher.
Sure.
Are a catcher.
Still catch from time to time.
Yeah, yeah. You lead the catching clinic here at RSP. So let's talk about the catcher position. What do you feel like are the most important aspects of what makes up a good catcher?
I think the biggest aspect, the biggest thing that makes up a good catcher, one, like, sure, skill, but I think the biggest thing that sets apart catchers is being a leader and being an overall communicator. I think those two things are, like, the biggest thing is, like, what separates good catchers, is being a leader and being a good communicator. After that is, I mean, you have the skills. You know, what makes it, I mean, you have to be able to catch the ball. You have to be able to catch the ball.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what sets it apart.
Yeah. The catcher, I think, at the younger ages, it doesn't feel as important, especially like T-ball, coach pitch.
Yes.
Yeah, like you're putting somebody behind the plate who probably is not necessarily your best player. Whereas I think, especially once you start kid pitch, they've got to be darn near your best player
for sure,
or at least your hardest working.
Yes,
because it is such an important position.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I remember reading Jerry Weinstein's book on coaching catchers, and he said when he looks at catchers to recruit. He's looking for somebody who could also play middle infield. He wants somebody who plays multiple sports, who was the point guard on their basketball team.
Yeah.
You need somebody quick.
Great feet.
You need somebody who's got those quick reflexes, who's got those fast twitch muscles.
Yeah,
you need somebody who's an athlete. I think gone are the days of kind of the big, slow catcher.
Yes.
You've got to have somebody back there who is a really high-end athlete.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's like a big reason why a lot of shortstops actually convert to catchers, or, you know, or vice versa, where it's like, or the shortstop is the backup catcher just because, you know, they're athletic, they can move, they have good hands, they have good reaction timing. Yeah, catchers.
As coaches, you put your best athletes up the middle. So,
yeah.
Catcher, pitcher, shortstop, center field.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I think catcher is one of those most important positions.
Absolutely.
You can win games with a really good catcher, and you can lose games with a not as good catcher.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, catchers, I like to think of it like you're the commander. You're the commander in chief. You're the guy that's relaying everything that the coach wants. But you're the voice of the field.
Yep.
You're the only spot on the field that can see every single inch of the field at the same time. You know, like, I mean, you're just looking at it. So take charge. Catchers, take charge. You're the quarterback. You're calling the shots. And that comes with that is make sure that you're a leader and you communicate.
So it sounds to me, too, like the next thing that a catcher needs to be good at is baseball IQ. Like, you need to know where the play is. You need to be able to think quickly on your feet and see whether a play can or can't be made and make sure that you're calling it out from behind the plate. That's one thing that I'm working on with my catchers this season. Last season, you know, at 10U, we as the coaches, we were calling out like as the play was happening. Sure. Go two, go two, go three, go three, whatever. That needs to be the catchers now.
Absolutely.
And they need to start taking control of that.
Yeah, especially how fast plays evolve. Is it can't relay from the coach to the catcher. You know, if the play's at second and then suddenly the left fielder misses the ball and now the play evolves to third. We can't have the catcher waiting on the coaches to call the base and all that stuff. So I think everything, I mean, just going back to leadership, being a leader is like make decisions, right? Like a big key of being a leader is making decisions, and that's a big thing about catching is like you have to be able to call first, second, or wherever the play evolves to. Because baseball is always evolving, those plays.
Yeah.
So being able to be loud, vocal, and then just be convicted with whatever call you do make.
Let's talk about receiving. Yes. I imagine that as time goes on and robo-ump comes more into play, yes, that receiving will not be quite the fine art and science that it used to be. But let's talk about receiving. How do you teach receiving the pitch at the bottom of the zone?
So if you rewind even 10 years ago, it used to be catchers were set up on 2 feet. They gave a target. Their glove never moved. They caught the ball and they stuck it. Like, that was it. And now you see how catching has evolved. And if you haven't, they're flowing into a one knee stance. They're giving a target. And as that pitcher is going into the release or into their leg lift or into their stride, it's called the loading phase, where the glove actually drops down towards the ground. It doesn't have to be all the way to the ground, but the glove will actually work down.
To work back up.
To work back up. Since that ball's coming in at a downward angle, it just allows your glove to be set up to work back on an upward angle as that ball comes in the downward angle.
Do you teach, like, pulling the glove into your body at all?
No, I like teaching it as if, like, your arm is set up as, like, a lever. So keeping kind of like an obtuse angle on your elbow with your thumb underneath the ball. And then as that pitch is coming in, letting your shoulder kind of drop your arm in that angle. So if your elbow angle is slightly obtuse, you know, like letting your shoulder drop it down and then let your whole arm come up as a lever. So not a lot of elbow movement. It's more so just like letting your shoulder move that ball up.
Right.
Letting your thumb, which in turn will let the pocket be underneath the ball.
This is one of the challenges of podcasting instead of like video recording. But
yeah.
So do you teach at all like a twist up with?
It depends on the pitch location. At the end of the day, we want to make sure that we present the ball. Like presenting is like showing the umpire where the pitch is or where you caught it. Present it with a nice horizontal glove. So letting your glove be flat. So wherever that pitch is, your thumb will always be in it, and then you'll end up with your glove flat as the presentation.
Okay.
So that's like you telling the umpire, like, hey, this is where the ball was. Like, this is where it's at.
Right.
This is where I caught it.
So you want to go out to the ball.
Yeah, coming up through the ball, and then sticking and slamming on the brakes where it's a strike. So it's almost a little bit of manipulating the pitch, manipulating the ball.
Right.
Which in turn you're kind of manipulating the umpire, you know?
So, you're supposed to be.
If it's a borderline pitch, hopefully that the glove magic of your glove moving will turn some borderline pitches into strikes.
Exactly. And so that's like,
kind of where it's become.
That turns into, you know, outs, that turns into wins.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can get those 2 to 3 borderline calls per inning or per game, you know, you're talking about the difference between a 2-1 count or a 1-2 count.
Yes.
You know, and that's a massive drop off in batting average.
Yeah, and in turn, that's going to drop more strike calls, where then drop pitch counts for your pitchers because they're not working as much. And by getting that consistent movement on the ball, it allows the umpire to now just see kind of what you're doing over time and hopefully sway them to give you more calls.
Right.
So if you're moving every single pitch, and like you're just smooth with it, you're probably going to get more strike calls.
Yeah.
Not always, but you probably will.
Okay. So just to reiterate, bottom of the zone pitches, you want to have your thumb under the ball and come up through it and end horizontal. So you're not necessarily teaching like a counterclockwise motion.
Yeah, just up through and then having a nice flat glove as you present the ball and saying like, hey, this is the pitch right there.
All right, inside pitches. Let's talk inside pitches. So inside to the right-handed batter, glove side
for the catcher. So glove side for the catcher. How we catch that, we still have the loading phase. So as that pitcher's coming in, we're going to load the glove. And if that glove, if that pitch we're calling ends up on your glove side for the catcher, it's almost going to be caught very similar to like an infielder backhanding a ball. So it'll be almost like loading, getting underneath as if you're backhanding the ball and then working back up through it. So it's almost a nice little U. So it's or a nice little like down, around, and back up to the strike zone.
Interesting. So
like wax on, wax off. You know, like so thinking wax on, so you're getting underneath the ball and bring it back up into the strike zone.
All right. So the way I've been taught is different. So sure. On that inside pitch, what I talk about is getting kind of your forearm
sure
vertical. And closing it in,
sure.
And pulling your glove around.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you will get strike calls on that. But if you're getting in the sense of presenting the ball horizontal glove over and over and over and over and over, it just starts looking the exact same, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So then it's like, okay, he's got flat glove here, flat glove here, flat glove here. They should
I strikes. See. Whereas if you're changing,
if you're rotating,
glove, then he knows it's an inside pitch.
Yeah, or it's out of the zone or whatever. So at the end of the day, like younger ages, you're probably still going to get that strike call. But the higher level you go, it's just trying to make everything. It's just like pitching, right? You want to be a robot. Same with catching. You want everything to look very similar.
I guess the thing I worry about with kind of coming out around the zone and back into it is like the body movement and it looking too
sure
obvious, because I want quiet movements, right?
For sure. And there's going to be a limit to where, like, if you can't get it that way, then it's just going to be a ball, right? Just let it be a ball,
right?
So yeah.
So there is a sense too of like you have to fight the physics of the ball too.
Yeah.
Right. Like if that ball is working its way tailing inside,
yeah,
you have to bring it back
yeah
in.
We don't want to break a right thumb. We don't want to break a thumb or anything like that. So yeah, as soon as it's outside your zone, just let it be a ball. Let your glove turn over. Let it be a ball. Or make sure you work through it. You know, strong
yeah
as if you're like punching yeah through the ball.
How do you, all right, we'll get to that next. But
yeah,
because I have another question about like how do you train? Do you use heavy balls to like strengthen the forearm and stuff like that?
You can do that a lot, or just repetition.
Yeah.
But yeah, weighted balls, I've seen a lot of people use weighted balls, like not out of a pitching machine or not anything hard, because we don't want to like bruise or damage hands, but like, you know, just like a front toss position where it just kind of trains that forearm. I've seen people use resistance bands, all that stuff. So,
all right. So, outside to the right-handed batter or arm side for the catcher.
Yeah.
How do you teach that?
Just get outside the ball and just swing it
so
in as fast as you can.
Opposite of the inside pitch. You want to
get outside and pull that sucker in as fast as you possibly can.
Yeah.
So we just want our movements to be smooth and fast. Just like just effortless, smooth and fast.
Okay, top of the zone. Do you teach the kind of the flap down?
Yeah, almost like a slam dunk. Like you're going up for a basket and you slam it down into the rim. Similar feel. So get up on top of it, slam the sucker down. Almost as if you have a claw or you're dunking a basketball into a basketball hoop.
And do you want your catchers holding it and like trying to wait for a call, or do you want them getting it and
I would think like at least like a second or so,
just
so they see it.
Right.
I hate when catchers hold it for like 5 seconds.
Right.
To like kind of prove a point to an umpire. Yeah. That's just one way to like make the
piss
umpire
them
really
off
upset.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
don't hold it for 10 seconds. Just whatever. And then just
right
open up the communication with the umpire and be like, hey, was that a ball? Okay, cool. Like, we'll fix it then.
Do you teach like kind of setting up a little to the outside of the plate with your feet angled, so that ump can have a clearer view and angle into the home plate? Or do you want your catchers just being kind of perpendicular to home plate?
I like my catchers being a little bit angled towards the middle of the plate. So if they're scooting towards their right, have their chest a little bit more angled to the middle of the plate. Just because by you catching the ball in the middle of your body, it's going to be a strike, as opposed to if you're straight, if you catch a ball in the middle of your
middle of your body and maybe a ball, if that makes sense.
Right.
Or at least closer to the edge. So having a little bit of angle back to the middle of the plate, depending on whichever side you're on. I like my catchers being at least 75% of their body behind the plate at all times. So meaning, unless we're like for sure calling a pitch way outside, I'm going to have my catchers, the majority of their body be behind the plate, just so you have more room for the pitcher to miss, if that makes sense.
If you feel like you're not getting that outside pitch called,
sure,
whether to the lefty or the righty, how do you, like, consistently throughout a game, do you try and have your catchers make an adjustment? And if so, what is that adjustment?
Yeah, if you don't get that call, especially like on the corners, I would say still position your body about 75-80% behind the plate, and then just give them, if they're not getting the call or if your pitcher's missing, just give your glove target a little bit more towards the middle. So, like, if a pitcher's missing away, give their target, let the target be loaded a little bit more towards the middle of the plate.
Oh, I see. So,
but if you're not getting calls, then you're just not getting calls.
So
maybe just,
it's counterproductive then to set up further outside.
Yeah. I mean, some people may have had that, may do that. I don't know. Do you do that?
There are times when I'm like, well, maybe if we sat up
further out,
like,
and then the miss looks more middle.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, no, I get the logic behind that. I've never done that. I tend to just, I'm just going to stop calling outside pitches.
Right. Yeah.
Or just know that they're going to be balls.
Yeah. Or tell your pitcher, like, scoot further, you know, toward the third base side of the rubber or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
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 For sure.
But okay.
No, I've never worked on that illusion before, you know.
Right. Yeah. Man, the other thing that drives me crazy too is we've had this happen twice now where before the game, the umpire will tell us, I've got a wide strike zone. Be ready.
Oh,
I've got
gosh.
A wide strike zone. I'm going to be calling strikes. And then they don't. And,
yes.
And oh my word, it drove me. It drives me nuts.
Yes.
And so many times it's like these borderline pitches. Oh, bull. Ball,
I was like,
out.
Dude, that's going to make batters hit.
You just said that it's going to be a wide strike zone.
Yes.
Ah! Yeah, it happened to us a couple weeks ago, and it happened to us last season,
oh
too.
My gosh.
And, oh, my word, it was driving me crazy.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about blocking, because I think blocking is such a difficult instinct, especially if you've got somebody who doubles as a first baseman. Because their instinct is to pick that ball.
Yeah.
And blocking is such a difficult instinct to develop.
Yes. I mean, you're saying it right off the bat, like, instinct. It is instinct. Like, blocking is a mindset. Especially, like, younger levels, they may not understand how to block. But if you're a catcher and you understand how to block, you know, like, what it looks like, and you've done it before, game speed blocking is all a mindset. It is 100% mindset. Is 100% just committing to it. So with blocking, honestly, like, the way that catching has evolved, I love when no runners are on, just work from one knee down stance, because you're going to block one heck of a more, you know, you're going to block a lot better from it. But blocking is hard, man. I think it just rep to where it just becomes just second nature.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't get good at blocking until I was, like, I don't know. I started catching when I was, like, 11, right around 11 or 12. I really didn't get good at blocking until I was, like, 13 or 14.
Yeah.
I mean, it took a little bit. It's just a mindset.
And it's got to be block every time, no matter what. Like, no runners on. No runners on. We gotta be blocking every single time. Just because no runners on doesn't mean we get to be lazy.
Yes, because you never know who's watching, especially the higher levels. You could have your high school coach. You could have a college coach. You don't know who's in the stands, and you don't know how long they're going to be there, right?
Right.
So if you have a scout or someone that's checking it out, and you're putting on a blocking clinic with no runners on, they're going to be like, wow, this catcher can block. But if they're only there for one inning, and there's no runners on, and you're catching, and you just are lazy, you never block, you're never going to catch their attention.
If you're giving that effort with nobody on, then with a runner on third, they know that effort's going to be there.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
One of my older sons... coaches, he used to call it hugging the bear. What? He'd say, hug the bear.
What?
You gotta be ready to, you know, be tough and get back there. Oh my gosh,
hug the bear. I've never heard that before.
That's hilarious.
I loved it.
That's very funny.
All right. So throwing game. Let's talk about throwing game.
Yes.
How do you teach, you know, the footwork and that quick release and that quick transfer, quick release?
Yeah.
Do you teach, especially if we're throwing down to second or third, like sneaking your throwing hand behind your glove?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I like, saying like rush your glove with your hand. So like rush your hand to your glove. So like the throwing hand will be nestled right. Like I like it being either right behind the glove or nestled in your hip crease, like on your right hip. In a fist, and then right when you catch it, literally rush your hand right to your glove, dump the ball into your hand, and then from there it's like almost like you're shooting bow and arrow. So glove works to the target, your hand with the ball works back to your ear just above your head, and then snap from there. That's kind of like the upper body. For the lower body, almost working to the point where the ball is up in a throwing position by the time your right foot lands. So literally as fast as you possibly go, right foot's in the ground by the time the ball gets up. So when your left foot lands, ball is out.
Are the catchers, it's hard for me to do this without like getting down into a
catcher's stick. Let's work on our imagery talk right now.
Let's see. Are you wanting before the right foot lands. So do you sneak that back foot, that right foot back behind, like as the ball is coming to you?
Not necessarily. So your feet will still stay steady, so you'll be in like an athletic secondary position. So we're talking about like a traditional catcher stance, so on 2 feet. Your left foot will be a little bit more ahead, so you will be staggered a little bit, so a little bit diagonal to where your left foot's a little bit forward. But yeah, you'll actually cheat your left knee at times. If you get really good at it, your left knee will actually dive towards the middle of your body a little bit as the moment you catch the ball. So as you're catching the ball, your left knee will dive in. So left knee will dive towards the middle of the ball. You'll feed your hand all while your right foot is getting planted underneath your chin. And then now left foot lands, ball's out. So how I like training that is I'll work upper body first. So they'll be standing or they'll be kneeling on 2 knees and they'll just work on dump the ball into a hand. And then we'll build it up to where we're thinking, dump the ball in and get to your separation to where your ball's up, glove to your target, so like into a throwing position. And then from there, they'll work on to standing in a catcher stance, so like 2 feet staggered. And they'll actually catch and feed the ball up to a throwing position, and they'll actually have to get to their right foot as fast as they possibly can and actually balance on it. So they'll be feeding it, ball up, and they'll think right foot on the ground, land it, left foot still off the ground. So they'll be almost like balancing. So they'll be coiled in their back hip. Back hip will be bent, strong, all that stuff. And that's just timing to where it's like, I transfer it, I exchange it, I get loaded, my right foot's in the ground, and now I can step and throw.
And now this is not an outfield throw. So we're not coming out the bottom of our glove.
We're not strumming a guitar.
Right. We're not doing a big loopy motion. Yes. It's out the top of the glove, yep. Right by the ear.
Yep.
Still facing away, maybe at a perpendicular
angle
rather than all the way behind you. But yeah, quick release.
For sure. Yeah, ball up. So it's almost like a bow and arrow to where like your glove is the bow. And then as you're pulling the ball back, you're almost like shooting an arrow. You're pulling a bow and arrow back. If you could visualize like a revolver, like a cowboy gun, it's almost like when you get to a throwing position, you know, the hammer, it's almost like the ball, right? So as your glove works out, the hammer of the gun comes back. And that's kind of like you're in a nice revolver position. You're dropping. So like when you're gonna drop the hammer, like that's literally your hand, right? Your throwing hand. So you pull the hammer back, you slam the hammer down, ball flown.
Yeah.
Phone, so.
And we want that ball to go not higher than the pitcher's head.
Heck no.
I
mean, arm strength one, is like 9U. Yeah, it's going to be a rainbow.
Right.
But, or 8U or whatever it is.
One hop like, in is okay.
Either a one hop or like, yeah, set your sights on the back edge of the dirt. So like if you throw a missile, it should, and no one's there, it should hit the back edge of the dirt right behind second base. So then it comes in about knee height or so to the middle infielder.
I like that target.
That's in a perfect world, but yeah. Not a lot of people can throw a missile like that. But that's kind of the focus. Because then you really snap on the ball, you get good backspin on it. The spin rate's up, so the ball should just fire right in there.
Yeah. Good deal.
Yeah.
Back picks. When do you back pick?
Perfect time. The opportune times to back pick is swing and misses, bunt and misses, even a ball in the dirt. If your body just tells you to pick it, pick the ball. If you pick it, back pick. Because, like, anytime So anytime that, I mean, don't force the throws. Like, back picks should never be forced. But, like, when you're a base runner and you get to your secondary lead and you see your batter swinging, you're automatically expecting, your brain is automatically saying, like, oh, he's going to make contact. So when you get your secondary, you're going to be like, oh, where's he going to hit the ball? So for that split second, your brain actually, like, is like, wait, where's the ball?
Yeah.
And you gotta misses, be in wait and see, bam, back pick, done.
Yeah.
It's almost like that brief hesitation. Or if the coach calls a bunt, you know, you're expecting bunt is easy, right? A bunt is easy. So my batter should, if you're a base runner, the batter should be able to lay down a bunt. So you get off into your secondary as a base runner, you're expecting the ball to be bunted, and if they miss it, back pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you pick a ball out of the dirt with your glove like a first baseman, back pick. Because if you're a base runner, you think, oh, I read ball in the dirt.
Right.
I should either go or I should get extended.
Get an, yeah.
Because
yeah.
You don't have the visual in it. So if
that's good.
So it's like a brief hesitation. So you're taking advantage of that brief hesitation.
I like that.
Yeah.
Do you back pick from your knees or do you try and hop up for that?
It depends on the catcher. It depends on their skill. But I like saying back pick. If they have the skill to do both, it depends on the pitch location. So if the pitch is up, you know, above your head, and the ball and it's pulling your momentum up, then yeah, just pop your feet sideways, back pick from your feet. If that pitch is like glove height or lower, just slide from your knees. So the biggest key is like sliding your left knee to the base and just get your body sideways and let it fly.
Yeah.
But biggest key with like back picks is like keep the ball down. If you sail it in the right field, that runner is now going to first to third.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah.
What else you want to talk about with catchers? You want to talk about handling pitchers?
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing. Handling pitchers is like, it just goes down to like the leadership. Comes down to just like being the quarterback on the field. Handling pitchers is more about like psychology too. So, that's the hardest thing about like young catchers is getting them to understand like when a pitcher's struggling, go talk to them. When a pitcher's doing well, go talk to them. When a key runner gets on and you know he's stealing, go talk to him. Because us as coaches, I mean, we don't have unlimited amount of mound visits. We can't always go out there and just be like, hey, you know, you need to do this and this and this. Catchers see pitchers pitch a lot. So they know what their tendencies are. So if their mechanics break down, you almost have to be like the psychologist / pitching coach in that sense.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, you're missing your arm side. That just means you need to keep your front shoulder closed. Or, hey, like, work down. You know, like, get your pitch down.
Right.
And sometimes you have to be a jerk to your, you know, especially higher level, sometimes you have to be a jerk to your pitcher. Like, dude, bury your changeup. Put your changeup in the ground.
You keep leaving it up.
Yes. So, yeah, handling pitchers that way is, like, making sure that you are literally on the same page at all times.
Communicating clearly.
Understanding what their tendencies are. And I think, in turn, if you call mound visits, you can help correct some of their, like, misses, meaning, like, their mechanics are breaking down. It will build trust, you know? Like, that's the way that, like, you'll build trust with your pitchers because you'll have a full understanding of them without like having, I don't know. It does build trust.
Yeah. With them. Did you ever like have a little notebook where you would like journal like different things that would happen during either games or practices about the different pitchers of like, so if Jackson's throwing, I know that, his slider does this or his curveball does this and tracking those kinds of things.
So I journal everything as a catcher. I journal everything up here in my brain.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it's just a matter of just, like, understanding, like,
yeah.
And it goes back to the friendship, too. Like, it's just understanding who your pitcher is, knowing their tendencies. I know travel ball, we don't throw a lot of bullpens, which stinks. You know, like, higher level high school, you're throwing bullpens consistently. Your catchers are always catching them. So they know their tendencies, but I think it's just about getting to know your pitchers,
yeah.
Knowing the tendencies,
yeah.
And building that rapport with them.
Cool.
Yeah.
What are your favorite, catcher drills?
Favorite catcher drills? I love working throwdown mechanics. So kind of like what we talked about earlier. So,
yeah.
Fast. Cause I mean, catchers get judged on their pop time.
Yeah.
So focusing, make sure that that's all in it. And then also, one drill that I work with really everyone is, so this drill that I'll use as a staple with almost all my catchers is they'll be on two knees. They'll be full gear. They'll be on two knees. So it kind of just like rests their legs, but, it works into, you can do it from a front toss flip. So underhand flip or overhand throw. And I suggest starting with underhand and work your way back to overhand. But anyway, start them out with two knees. They'll work through a loading and then work through, recognizing when to catch the ball and when to block the ball. So,
yeah.
So you can call out first five. You can say, hey, catch, and they'll catch it. So right before you flip it, you'll say catch. They'll work on loading, catch the ball, present it, and then you can work on blocking where it's like, okay, load it, block it. So they're already in two knees. They don't have to worry about the actual drop to the block. It's more so like, okay, the visual of do I catch it, when do I block it, and you can work your way back to it. Make sure that you're good with your throws so you're not just like hitting them in the forearms, you know? So like right. Make sure you actually give them good spikes on the ground for their blocks. And then just like go silent and be like, okay, you have to recognize, you have to give me 10, whether it's catch or blocks. So they'll either block it, they'll catch it. And then you can go from a game speed where they're actually set up in their stances. But that's probably one of the staples I use with a lot of my catchers. When to catch it, when to block it.
One of the ones that I like, especially with younger catchers, just to learn blocking, is to set up a line of baseballs.
Yeah.
And you just you block and you learn blocking to the right and then you go
so the shadow
the
blocks,
other way and block to the left.
Yeah.
And you just work your way down the line of baseballs, blocking to the right and then come back.
Yeah, it's like a line
left.
Of three baseballs. Yeah, a line of three baseballs, that kind of what you're alluding
or
to.
Ten.
Or 10. Or 10. Oh, yeah. But each line's like three baseballs. But, like, yeah, it could be 10 lines in a row.
Yeah.
And you could do that off of, like, you have multiple catchers going through. Like, a skill development where I have, like, 10 catchers, it'll be like, okay, first person goes, and then they'll work up to the next line of baseballs.
Yeah.
But then second person will go, and then the third. So it's multiple people going at once.
Yeah.
You'll be like, point to the left, point to the right, point down the middle. And they'll have to block. Yeah, shadow blocks are huge.
Yeah.
Shadow blocks are huge because of that reaction time.
Right. Just learning the mechanics too.
Yes.
Yeah,
I think overall, like, catchers have to be very, very tough. You have to go in and with the understanding of, like, you're going to get banged up. And no one's ever, like, people will check on you. But, like, just know that catching is very hard.
Yeah.
And at times it's a thankless job because you could get beat up, you could walk away with 20 bruises, and not a lot of people will know that.
Right.
You know, like, you could be bruised up, you could be dying, you could be literally sweating your buns off, and it's like, hey, good job.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
nice
work. I literally just died for you guys, and all you get is a high five.
Come on, give me a snow cone or something.
Seriously. But just understand, like, you're going to get beat up, you're going to have a thumb that hurts at times, you're going to be bruised at times, not always. I'm not trying to scare people away from catching, but like there's times where you're going to get beat up. But
who did you admire as a catcher,
man? Growing up was Brad Ausmus. He was a catcher for Astros, the Padres, all that stuff. Wore his number 11 for a while. Once he retired, Yadier Molina was kind of my idol.
Yeah, good old
so
Yadier
was my idol. I wanted to be him so bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, started out with Brad Ausmus, who I think he's one of the Yankees coaches now. Bounced around. But Brad Ausmus, and then Yachty.
Pudge. It was Pudge for me.
Yeah, Pudge.
Love Pudge Rodriguez.
Yeah, Pudge had a cannon. But like you could just go back to all those classics. Like Benito Santiago, like, was the first one thrown from his knees the majority of the time. But that dude was fast.
Yeah.
That dude was fast.
Yep.
Yeah, there's just so many catchers, and like this day and age, like I think the I mean, the catcher these days, like JT Realmuto, like he's always a key catcher. Yeah. I think he's one that just like pronounces just a big emphasis on like the leadership. He understands what it is to control the game. You watch him, man. He's athletic too. He's constantly flowing from position to position to position to stance. But it is cool seeing how many good catchers there are.
Yeah.
And the way that stats have gone, like statistics. So like I think StatCast now has how many balls, like they have a percentage of like how many strike calls you get as a catcher. Which is crazy. Like, so it goes back to the whole like manipulating the pitch, making sure that you get the borderline calls. Cause like if you're good with your glove, man, you're going to get more strike calls. Yeah. More strike calls keeps the pitch counts down.
It's huge. It really is. Yeah, that receiving and framing piece of it is so big.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Catchers, like, keep working, man. Like, catchers, it's a hard, thankless job, but, like, man, keep working. You have so much to master, but just, get after it.
Catchers are so important that we didn't get to any of the other positions we wanted to talk about today.
Absolutely. I think we'll keep those catchers, man. Today's focus.
Yeah.
How to coach catchers. But again, just like understand that it is a very tough job. It is a very tough job. And just if you want to be a catcher, it's going to take work. But you could be a great catcher if you're willing to work.
Yep. All right. So maybe we will carry some of this over to our next episode as we look at pitching and go from there.
Absolutely.
Sound good?
Yeah, if you follow along, man, look forward to our chalk talk. Look forward to our pyramid of success.
That's right. Woo!
Yes.
Well, guys, all right, man. Well, have a good week.
Yeah,
and
you too.
We'll see you next week.
Absolutely. As always, rate, leave comments, give us suggestions, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Let us know what your thoughts are.
All right. See you on episode 3.
See ya.